The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Wednesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. You know the drill. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Numbers game. Live from Bar Canada here at the D. You good? How you doing, man? Good morning to
you,
sir.
I'm good. How are you? How are you?
I'm doing very well. Doing very well. Got a packed show here today. JVT joins us momentarily. Put a bow on the NBA season. And talk some baseball with him as well. Will Hill, Jason Weingarten with all their plays. I'm sure Jason Weingarten has a Rojang play this week. I'm guessing. Sia Najad on the Travelers. I'd imagine he might have a Scottie Scheffler spite bet this week. We'll see. Packed field at the Travelers. And then Paul Carr on Euro Cup 2024 in full swing. So much to get to. We got to talk, got to update the College World Series. We got to bring up Willie Mays. We start, though, however, with a couple things that were burning for us yesterday. Obviously, the NHL. Let's start there, which is burning for everybody. Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final, and we have a situation. The Edmonton Oilers will not go away. They beat the Panthers 5-3. And after being down 3-0 in this best-of-seven final, they have got it to 3-2 and a six-hour flight back to Edmonton, Alberta. We got to get Andy McNeil on the show. He's an Edmonton native. I got to get his opinion on this, or just the feel of what's going on at Edmonton. The Oilers are trying to become, now remember in the NBA, it's 0-156 lifetime in the history of the NBA for teams trying to come back from a 3-0 deficit. Only four have forced a game seven, but 0-156 for those trying to pull off that miraculous comeback. In the NHL, Kelly, it has happened four times in the history of the NHL. Still a rarity, not a ofer like the NBA. The only time it happened in the finals was in the finals was the 1942 Stanley Cup Finals when the Toronto Maple Leafs came back to beat the Detroit Red Wings after being down 3-0. Then since then, these are not finals, 1975 Stanley Cup quarters, the Islanders did so against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Some old hats might remember that. They won eight games that year in the postseason while facing elimination. The Islanders did. Didn't end up winning the cup. The Flyers did that year, but the Islanders did it against the Penguins. 2010, folks will remember the Eastern Conference semifinals when the Flyers did it to the Bruins. Also overcame a 3-0 deficit in Game 7 of that series. So not only did they come back from 3-0, but then when they got to the Game 7, they trailed 3-0 and did it. And then the 24th, the most recent occurrence, the fourth of the four times it's happened, the 2014 Western Conference first round when the LA Kings did it against the San Jose Sharks. LA went on to win the Stanley Cup. They won three Game 7s that year. They hold the record for the most elimination games won in a single playoff year seven times they did it as a eventual Stanley Cup champion. So the Oilers are trying to become the fifth and the second when it comes to the finals. Connor McDavid, 2 goals, 2 assists last night. For the second consecutive night, the Oilers started things with a shorthanded goal. They're only the fourth team in the last 30 Stanley Cup finals to actually have multiple shorthanded goals in the course of a finals. And now we have this unbelievable situation. Not only are they chasing that history, but Conn Smythe becomes this chase of history as well, because Conn Smythe started in 1965. They started giving out that award in 1965. There have only been five instances, we won't say other because it hasn't happened yet, but there's only been five instances since 1965 where a player on a losing team won the Conn Smythe. 1966, Detroit Red Wings, Roger Crozier. Glenn Hall in 1968 with the Blues. Reggie Leach with the Flyers in 76. Ron Hextall in goal for the Flyers in 1987. And then, folks will remember 2003, Jean-Sébastien Giguère for the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim in 2003. So, Connor McDavid now positioned, and I'm not even sure they have to win anymore. Win or lose, he is your favorite right now, minus 150 at DraftKings. So he has gone. Remember, before this game, I said I bet Sergei Bobrovsky plus 131. All he's got to do is come out, have a great game in Game 5. No one's going to remember his bad performance in Game 4. He's going to win this. How possibly could he be plus money? That didn't happen. He has been a sieve since late in Game 3. And right now, and by the way, Barkov hasn't distinguished himself since, so even if the Panthers win, obviously the Oilers win. Remember, our take was, you can't, if the Oilers are going to win, if you believe in the Oilers, bet them at 7-1 rather than McDavid at plus 650. But that proved to be perhaps horrible advice also, because if the Panthers win this in 6 or 7, but particularly 7, Connor McDavid, like who else is going to get this? Who else is going to get this? Connor McDavid could be the sixth player on a losing team to take this. And right now he went from a plus 650 dog to minus 150 in the course of one hockey game.
Yeah, it is. It looks like he's definitely going to win it if the Oilers win. But you're right.
Oh, for
like,
sure
it's,
that.
It's kind of up in the air a little bit when you start talking about if Florida wins it. What the great line from him before the game, we're going to drag them back to Alberta.
He dragged them all right.
I actually like how you're hearing these guys complain about the travel a little bit. Like, it is a brutal trip to go from South Florida to Edmonton. That's
six
for sure.
6 hours.
It's wild, man.
6 hours.
It's wild. We appreciate the Oilers for the content extension here, but I'm ready to get my Panthers ticket home.
You have a Panthers ticket too.
Oh, yeah. Didn't you bet it? No?
The Panthers?
Yeah.
Never.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got a series ticket on.
Never. I have no future.
Yeah, I'm ready for that one.
I had Bobrovsky before this last game thinking I'm clever. I guess who's not clever?
Sergei looking a whole lot more like a Stuart recently than a Sergei.
Stuart Skinner.
Pick it up, Bob.
Good on hockey because they're providing drama that the NBA did not. The other thing that happened, which is important to bettors yesterday, and certainly to us, because how many times have we talked about NFL Comeback Player of the Year? How many times? A million? A billion?
This week? This month? 2024? Last season? What?
We had Aaron Schatz, the founder of Football Outsiders, the creator of DVOA. Now he works at FTN. We had him on during Super Bowl week. And during Super Bowl week, we, on a numbers game, we broke a lot of news. Like, we had Merrill Hodge on. He was saying Caleb Williams is nothing special, remember? And Aaron Schatz himself came on and said, you know all those MVP votes? I was the guy who didn't vote for Lamar Jackson first. We were at dinner with him the night before, and he was just devastated that he was the one, and he took so much incoming. The other thing he shared with us, unfairly, by the way, the other thing he shared with us was that when it came to Comeback Player of the Year, he said, get ready for it. There's going to be a change. He said, it's already happening. Well, it came out yesterday publicly. This was a statement from the NFL. The spirit of the AP Comeback Player of the Year Award is to honor a player who has demonstrated resilience in the face of adversity by overcoming, ready for this, Kelly, illness, physical injury, or other circumstances that led him to miss playing time the previous season. The decision to provide this guidance was made last December, that's how Shotzi knew, but could not be implemented for the 2023 awards because the season was almost completed. Translation, DeMar Hamlin should have won this thing, but we didn't get the fine print in time, so sorry about that. And maybe we're a little embarrassed that Joe Flacco won this. So for all of us who had DeMar Hamlin, we're screaming about it. He almost died on the field. How can you not give it to him? There's the NFL's mea culpa. Too late. And now what this means is for betting this moving forward, this is much more defined. Remember, this was our whole thing. Like, how do you even speculate about this? Because we don't know how voters are going to go with this because there's no real solid definition. Well, now we have one. And so if you look at the Comeback Player of the Year odds heading into next season, you can throw out guys who are coming back from sucking, as I always said, right? Geno Smith, Comeback Player of the Year. Why? What's he coming back from? Sucking? Well, how about, I don't know, Russell Wilson jumps off the page there at 12-1, right?
Yeah, that's the biggest one.
Sam Darnold, 20-1. These are throwouts, as they say in the horse racing biz. They're all throwouts. But who does it?
Bryce Young was 40-1. He's a little off this graphic, but he's 40-1.
Deshaun Watson should never be in this category ever. They'll never give it to him.
I don't think
that has nothing to do with the fine print.
But
who is in play? Aaron Rodgers is in play. Joe Burrow is in play. Certainly Nick Chubb is in play at 15-1. Nick Chubb, for those who forget the sort of history with Nick Chubb, not only did he have the knee injury in September, this past September, but in that same knee, he tore three ligaments in college in a game against Tennessee. So that's a pretty compelling story, for sure. A little further down the board, Tank Dell you remember from the Houston Texans, broke his fibula in a game in December of last year, broke his fibula, and then went ahead and doubled down on that this offseason last month, which kind of went under the radar. He was an innocent bystander at a club, and he got shot.
Mm-hmm.
Not an injury that he can't recover from. Thankfully, no one else hurt seriously in that incident. But if you're looking for comeback player of the year narratives, those are the types of things, the Chubb and the Dell stories, that now ought to, based on this definition, trump the comeback from sucking guys.
It is actually, I mean, now that we're looking at this market with through a fresh lens, right?
Yes.
Like, you get to
it's
actually
a brand new world,
yeah,
everybody.
Right, yeah, like, you don't have to worry about a surprise guy coming off the couch, really, and beating you. It does feel like you can narrow down this list a little bit more. Like, I don't know about you, but if it was a toss-up, let's say Aaron Rodgers and Joe Burrow do, like the same thing this year, I don't really understand why there's that big of a separation between Rodgers and Burrow in the odds. Like, I think that they would be running to give it to Joe Burrow if he had a great season this year. Anthony Richardson, like, these ones are always tough. Like, I love Anthony Richardson as much as anybody. He missed some games in his rookie year. Like, are we're going to go hand an award to a guy that
he didn't play enough games in his rookie year.
Right, yeah. I mean, how many was it? Like,
yeah.
Seven? Did he even get to that? Like, we're going to go give an award to a guy in a second year after he played seven games a year before?
Anyway, I think this is for bettors in this market. That's big news and really ought to induce a couple long shot bets right out of the gate, I think. Maybe the ones I mentioned. We'll come back. JVT joins us. His thoughts on the Celtics in terms of their historical legacy. Jason Tatum's horrible post-game inauthenticity. That's next. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
For goodness sakes, check out our website, vsin.com. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state. That's always interesting. Betting tools, betting guides. Today, looking at the front page here, Mike Somich, alternative ways to find value in MLB betting. Lou Finicaro on UFC Fight Night. Tyler Shoemaker on the WNBA. You name it, we got it at vsin.com. By the way, I have a tennis match coming up that I bet after that debacle on Heather Watson yesterday where we had a plus 180 play on her and she was up 5-2 in the third and then she gacked it. I've got Victoria Golubic again as a big dog. We won on her as a big dog the other day. This is even bigger. This is plus 225. I got her at plus 223 last night on the website vsin.com/picks. That's for subscribers. Every host, every guest, every sport where we have a pick, that is at vsin.com/picks on the website. So I have Victoria Golubic against my girl Leila Fernandez. But Golubic is really good on grass, and at plus 223, that is a play. Should start here momentarily in England. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Always appreciate the feedback from everybody. This is from Roger Jones. Well, let me read. I think you are shortchanging Darnold on comeback player of the year. Haunting doesn't count. I see ghosts out there. Can't wait for Weingarten to push the narrative in October. RJ, can someone let JVT know that he still has the sticker on his hat? I think he's just being cool with the sticker on
his cool
hat,
right? That's what the cool kids do. Yeah,
that's what the cool kids do, man. A lot of response to the Rufus Peabody interview yesterday. The numbers guys, such a great interview. Thanks for that, Gil. For a moment there at the beginning, it felt like Rufus had made a plea bargain. Fascinating. Wharton Moneyball. From the Wharton School, checking in. Great look at our friend Rufus Peabody and some eye-opening details about the golf betting world. Appreciate that. This is from, Byron Lindekew checked in. He said, awesome insights, fellas, on that. It's all Rufus. Really appreciate him coming on from London yesterday. This is from Rydeco, who said, he sent a couple. This is from late last night. He said, please be a sports talk radio guy tomorrow, meaning this morning. It's expected from you. So I asked him, I said, are you speaking of Willie Mays? He goes, yes. So I will mention Willie Mays coming up, obviously, for some, the greatest player of all time, passing away at the age of 93 and a fixture at Giants games for so many of these years where I was there. And this one, and we'll lead into Will Hill with this. This is from Just to Follow Veasan. He says, so Flacco publicly didn't want the award, talking about comeback player of the year, and now the NFL defined it as something he wouldn't have gotten in the future. What an awkward waste of an award. Great job, voters. we bring in Will Hill, everybody, at not the Will Hill. He is the host of the Should Have Bet More podcast and, of course, part of Chris Felica's Best Bets pod, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Will, you have something to share about Comeback Player of the Year with us?
Yeah, just wrote yesterday a piece on Comeback Player of the Year. I was just looking for futures, just kind of combing through everything. The MVP numbers aren't that great. Stumbled upon Comeback Player of the Year, and Darnold at 20-1, I thought was one that jumped out to me. I wrote about it just because I think he's in a good position. A lot of my handicap was, hey, there's no criteria for this stuff. Geno Smith, we saw, kind of went under a similar, I don't know, path where he was a Jets quarterback, a bust, and then he ends up in a good situation, plays well, then he wins the award. Darnold, I'm not even a fan of Darnold, but he's in a great situation with Jefferson and Addison and a defense that played well last year. You add Aaron Jones. So, I mean, he's minus 270 to be the week one starter for the Vikings. The things out of camp for McCarthy haven't been great. So if Darnold gets the job, wins the job, and leads them to the playoffs, there's going to be a narrative. And people like to dunk on the Jets anyway and just say, hey, it was the Jets that ruined him. Everyone, you know, thinks he's talented. It's not his fault. So if he ever went, I don't know, 10-7, 11-6, and led him to the playoffs, I think he fits the fact that, hey, there's no criteria, and he's got as good a case as anybody. Rodgers is like even money. You can't bet that. But now that there's this criteria where basically, I don't know how you guys perceive it. I caught some of your discussion of it. You basically have to be coming off an injury. You have to have missed games, but missed games for a reason. It's a little clear. So that would kind of debunk it, a lot of what I wrote, not all of it.
The NFL was waiting. They were like, has Will Hill's article dropped yet? Has it yet? Yet? Not yet? Okay, now it has? Okay, we'll give you an
announcement. They still left themselves a little bit of wiggle room in the language. This is the AP. It is the AP award, right? So it's AP redefining what this is. But overcoming illness, physical injury, or other circumstances that led him to miss playing time the previous season.
They don't put that out without being really intentional about why they're putting that.
Oh, I think you're right, but I also don't blame them for leaving themselves wiggle room in case something crazy happens.
I will say this: if someone ever wins this again, having come back from sucking and not meeting that criteria, we should all just riot the building.
That's the thing. Like, we're deep diving into these rules, the different clauses, but are the writers, like, the writers don't, I mean, how much do they pay attention to this? They just fill out the ballot. Hey, Darnold was a good story. I'll vote for him. Are they really going to be talked off it? I don't know. It's interesting. It is funny, the timing of it. So
yeah.
I don't know. It definitely hurts the bet, but who knows?
Sorry about your piece. Dead on arrival.
I think I've also decided in the past 15 minutes that there's like a 98% chance it's Rodgers, Burrow, or Cousins winning.
That's,
so winning
that's
this,
right.
Like, for the amount of time we spent talking about this last year. We're not at all this year.
Well, we didn't even mention that in the first segment, or I didn't. You're right. And like Rodgers, Burrow, or Cousins, it may just be that simple. Right,
yeah,
at the top.
Whoever can make it through the season and you know, get to the playoffs.
Will, what do you got in baseball today?
I played under. There's a 4.5 first five Guardians and Mariners. Woo against Bibee. Two pitchers I really like. Bibee has really good numbers. If you look at Woo, Woo's one of the more underrated pitchers in baseball. 188 expected batting average. A 1.88, I think, expected ERA. I mean, he's in the top 1 or 2 percentile in all these categories when you look at that. I mean, he's really throwing the ball incredibly well, and Bibee's a guy I like. So 4.5 is juice. I think it's minus 135 at DraftKings, minus 132 some other spots. But I like getting that hook. I like it. Hey, if it's 3-1 or 2-2 after 5, you win instead of push. I think that hook is key. So I did play the under there. I want to play the Giants somehow. I don't know if you've heard of this baseball team by the Bay called the San Francisco Giants, Gilly. But they're facing Hendricks. Hendricks has been awful. 317 expected batting average, 563 expected ERA. He's just gotten hammered. He basically throws the ball, you know, 85, 86 miles an hour. So I don't know. Giants team total first five is like 2.5. It's juice, but they should be able to hit Hendricks. I don't know if you saw this. This is one of the higher totals you'll see in baseball now with all the pitching, and you know, it's hard to score 11. So my guess is, I haven't looked at it, my guess is the wind is blowing out in Wrigley. So that's about as high a total non-cores as you'll see. But I don't know, I'll probably play Giants first five or over team total 2.5 in the first five, maybe split my bet between those two. I think Cole's a little overvalued here for the Yanks. I never like taking pitchers their first start back off the IL. I feel like they could be a little bit rusty, just not sharp. He's laying a good number, I think minus 175. So you get a good number on the comeback on Baltimore. I wonder if they're going to throw at Henderson because, I mean, Judge got hit and left the game. Torres got hit. I wonder, you know, is there some prop angle where, hey, Henderson gets hit early and you play under his hits? Because first of all, if he gets hit, he loses in at bat. And, you know, who knows if it's not really the nature of the game anymore. But, hey, if two of my guys got hit, you knock Judge out of the game, then you hit Torres, whether it's intentional or not, I got to come back and you know, throw at your best player. That's just old school baseball. So I do think the Orioles are a little undervalued.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Yankees stats here. This is, I mean, a huge day for you with Garrett Cole in this three-game set with the Orioles and Garrett Cole making his debut. Yankees not only the best record in baseball, but I'm looking at first five stats for bettors, the most profitable team, first five, without Garrett Cole, the New York Yankees thus far this year. You'd be up 13.5 units. That thing you mentioned about Kyle Hendricks, though, I cannot, you know, I must have at least 20 times over the course of the years with Kyle Hendricks when talking about a game in which he was starting, say he throws, you know, the 85-mile-per-hour pitch. His margin of error is so thin. I don't know how this guy does it. So this moment in his career was always going to happen, right? Like, it just was inevitable, and here we are.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, he used to 88, 89. He could really get it up to, like, 91. That's livable. You still have the margin for error, but he's at that margin where, you know, you lose a mile or two, it's just all the difference in the world. Where now, I mean, you're not getting fooled on the changeup. You're really going to get hit hard. So I got to figure out a way to play the Giants somehow here. I started betting some NBA draft stuff. I don't know. Boy, if it weren't for betting the draft, this draft would be rough because nobody's ever heard of any of these guys. But I guess I think it was Jonathan Wasserman tweeted out that Cody Williams could be a sleeper for top five. So I bet him third, fourth, and fifth, all like, you know, 12-1, 25-1, 30-1. And then he tweeted out some guy, Buvelas, could be a top five. I went to bet it, and then I just said, you know what? I'm not doing this.
I don't know.
I'm not
going to
sit here with 100 bets on 100 bets I've never heard of. I got my little action in on Cody Williams, who could be a sleeper. He's one of the few guys I've actually heard of, the kid from Colorado, who I think has a chance to be a decent player. But this draft will be interesting, what they want to book, what they hang, because nobody knows any of these players. Nobody's heard of any of these players. It's going to be interesting.
It's a week from tonight, the NBA draft. Week from tonight.
Amazing, right?
Any other, before we go, any other random macro sports take that you have or a bet that you've got that others do not?
I had Jason Weingarten on the pod. I think, I don't know if he's coming up with you, so I'll be interested to listen. But we were going through NL MVP. I feel like there's a bet there. It's almost like Where's Waldo, where you're staring. You know Waldo's on the page somewhere. I just can't find it because Harper and Ohtani are short. Everyone else is double digits. And you just go through the numbers. I know there's somebody there at double digit long odds that has a shot. I just can't seem to figure out who it is. So it's definitely a market I'll be keeping my eye on with Bets Hurt.
All right. I'll be sure to ax him about it as well, among other things. Will appreciate it. And like the dark blazer, man. Nice job on the article. Nice job on the comeback player of the year article, by the way. Good job, man.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. That's a tough one when you submit and then the NFL's like, we're changing the rules. That sucks. Dead on arrival. We'll come back. Sia Najat talking golf next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on a numbers game, live from Barcanada, the barrage, here at downtown Las Vegas at the D. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Pitlin. I just want to read this one tweet, Kelly, because I think you appreciate this. Chris Hartman, our old buddy from Primetime Action Days, he says, Gil, new Matt Brown challenge, combining golf and football. He says, can he hit a golf ball from under one upright through the opposite upright on a football field? 100 yards, five swings with a PW. What is a PW in this case?
Pitching wedge.
Pitching wedge. With a pitching wedge. Okay. Yeah, 100 yards. How many go through? This is a very bettable event. Thanks. It is a very bettable event. However, knowing our buddy Matt Brown, if we suggest this to him, he's going to need the perfect weather conditions. The barometer has to be exact where it needs to be as well.
Correct.
Barometer reading.
We couldn't go to our same old football field because that was turf of some kind. He would need grass to hit.
He would need grass. That's right. He would have to.
It was turf, right? I remember that.
No, it was grass.
It's grass?
Wait, I don't remember. You hurt yourself.
Had to have been turf because I went down. The turf
right.
Monster got me, so it had to have been turf.
That's right.
Sean tells me turf, yes.
Turf, it was turf.
At the great All-Star Park or whatever? Haven't been back since. Great park, though.
Well, caused your most catastrophic injury ever.
Remember how nice
that
was?
Beautiful.
We're all like, why is there nobody here? This is beautiful out here.
It's incredible. Before we get to Sia and talk travelers, Monty Williams.
Yeah.
What the what?
I have no idea. Pistons have fired Monty Williams 1 year after paying him a whole lot of money to come over to Detroit and kind of rebuild their whole organization there. So not really. I've heard a couple stories about stuff going on behind the scenes. So I don't know if there's kind of more to this.
There has to be more to
this. Yeah, more to this. And like his wife was sick too, so I don't know if that's involved. I don't want to jump to anything here, but they are parting ways at least with Monty Williams
after a 14-68 season.
Yeah,
it should be noted.
But it was, I mean, it's 5 years, $65 million left that they have to pay him out. And then also real quick, Pascal Siakam and the Pacers seem to have agreed to an extension. Max contract for him coming as soon as free agency opens and he can sign.
Did you say Monty Williams' wife was sick?
Yes, I believe so.
You know, his wife, his previous wife, died in a car accident in like in 2016. So, I mean, if that's the case, geez, if that's related to this. The other thing I want to mention to you is we have the first tropical storm of the season, Kelly.
Yeah, we do.
It's headed to Texas.
Heading towards Texas.
Where are you going this weekend?
I'm heading to Texas, heading to Austin to meet. No, this is the best part. Headed to Austin to meet up with friends that were all of us from back in South Florida days. So I'm getting all the texts right now of like, are we really all going to fly to Austin, Texas and get hit by a tropical storm?
I'm not trying to be flippant here with you, but you really should actually determine when that storm is hitting, because that would be a really stupid idea. And even though you're halfway into the state, it still is going to affect the weather.
Probably. I mean, things are already paid for, though. Like, what are you supposed to do?
Brutal. See, Najad joins us, everybody, from the it's tomorrow night. From the enjoy. Host and analyst at the Monumental Sports Network. You can follow him on Twitter at Sia Najad, SianEjad. Talking Travelers with us. How you doing, Sia? What's happening?
I'm doing well, although I'm a little upset that Kelly didn't invite me to the festivities, given that I was in South Florida for 17 years. Yes, I missed Kelly. He went out to Vegas, but still. I'd like an invite next time.
Hey, we got an Airbnb. You're welcome to come, Sia. We got a couch for you.
Sounds like a snub to me, Sia. That's what it sounds like.
It's a snub.
All right, Travelers, great field. I'm really curious to see how you're going to bet this. Especially, well, before we do that, your thoughts on what just transpired at the U.S. Open. How did you do on that?
Well, I didn't do great. I didn't have any out. The only outright that I had that was in contention was Hideki Matsuyama. And I don't know if you're referring to the Rory McIlroy debacle. I actually did have a live bet on Rory probably after the fourth hole going into the par five. I had him at plus 200 to win, which, you know, it wasn't some huge bet or anything. The fact that he lost that tournament, though, I mean, credit to Bryson and all that, but you can't miss two putts within 4 feet, one within 3 feet on two of the last three holes. It's just, you know, we always overuse the word choke, but in this case, it was like the perfect illustration of a choke job. So,
yeah.
But I will say this, it was great for golf that Bryson won. It still would have been great if Rory won as well. I think everybody has made the determination that this live PGA Tour needs to get back together sooner rather than later. They had already made that determination, but it was punctuated by Bryson DeChambeau this last week.
Well said. All right, what are we doing at the Travelers this week? Again, a great field, including Scottie Scheffler. Are we making any Scottie Scheffler angry bets this week?
Probably not. And honestly, like most of the last 4 to 8 weeks, I would say I've been betting the without Scottie Scheffler market. In other words, I've taken him out of the mix and taken shorter odds. I choose not to do that this week. I think Scottie could absolutely win it. He's been a monster at these signature events. He's been a monster at majors with the exception of last week. But I don't know that this course really takes advantage of all of Scottie's strengths, so much so that I want to take the without Scottie Scheffler market. So the two that I've taken so far, and I think I'm going to add one, but Ludvig Åberg at plus 1400, I really like him. And anybody who follows golf, like, I don't know that I need to sit here and sing the praises of Ludvig, because he's been so incredibly good, kind of machine-like. He got off track a little bit last week at the U.S. Open because of the around the green play, but this is a much different around the green test. And frankly, I'm not emphasizing around the green play like I would have last week. The ball striking is there, the ability to get hot with the putter and pile up the birdies at what will likely be a birdie fest. I mean, plus 1400 isn't the greatest number. You'd opened at plus 1700, then plus 1600, then Rory withdrew. It got down to plus 1400. I still think it's a good enough number to bet. The other one that I'm betting is a guy I faded last week. He was specifically a fade for me because of the around the green play, and that was Victor Hovland. I'm not even saying I'm in love with Victor Hovland this week, although I love his ball striking. I love his ability to get hot with the putter, all of those things. He checks a lot of the boxes, but he's 20 to 1. And at a certain point, the odds fall far enough where it just creates value on a guy that I know is one of the best players in the world. In my opinion, top 5, top 7 player in the world. So Victor Hovland at a very good course fit. At plus 2,000, he's it's going to be a short card for me. It's going to be Ludwig at plus 1,400, Victor at plus 2,000. I may throw in like a Sahith Theegala at plus 3,300 or a Sepp Straka, Corey Connors. I haven't really decided what I'm doing there, but those are my two main outrights.
Yeah, probably should mention Scotty Scheffler plus 360 is the short shot here. Xander Schauffele plus 750. Morikawa's 12-1, the usual suspects, if you will, at the top of the leaderboard. So you mentioned your outrights. Of course, it is a Sia Najad segment. That means officially it is not one until we talk first-round leaders, because that is your thing, whether you like it or not, Sia. Your success means that it is. What did you bet here for first-round leader?
So I mentioned Sahith Theegala at 33-1. I really like his game. I like how his game is trending. He can be a little erratic off the tee, but he's really kind of honed that in a little bit. And for the record, he was second here 2 years ago. So he knows how to play this course. He knows how to attack this course, get it in the fairway, get dialed in with the approach play. And again, he's another guy that can pile up the birdies. You really want guys who can get hot with the flat stick and who hopefully have good ball striking numbers as well. And Sahith Theegala checks all those boxes. As a first round leader, I think he's kind of like a perfect candidate. Another perfect candidate at 40-1, Sepp Straka, who honestly, if Sepp Straka had like long flowing hair and like Tommy Fleetwood and just like looked the part like some of these other guys, his odds would be dramatically shorter week to week. But for whatever reason, Sepp Straka doesn't really get the recognition for whatever reason. And he's long. He's long in the outright board, and it's starting to correct now because just piling up top 10s and top 20s. But the long and short of it is Sepp Straka can get red hot. He's been good at this course before. He's 40-1. He's a guy that can absolutely fill it up with the putter when he's on. And the ball striking's been great. So I like him at 40-1. And then Taylor Pendrith, this is kind of a wild card. The last first round leader I hit, it was like 4 or 5 weeks ago with Akshay Bhatia at this same number, 65-66-1. This is a guy that I don't think can survive all four rounds, but Taylor Pendrith is playing really, really good golf. Perhaps the best golf he's played in his entire career so far. He's shaken off an injury from like a year or two ago. And now the ball striking is there, a little erratic off the tee, but the putter, I just mentioned, you got to have guys that fill it up with the putter. He has been unbelievable with the putter over the last 6 or 7 tournaments. If he gets hot for 18 holes, look out, because 65-66-1 could cash in with Taylor.
I will be honest, I did not expect the golf betting market lack of flowing hair discount theory on the show today, but here we are.
Gil, it's name recognition. Like, if you have a cool sounding name, you're going to be like 10 points shorter than a guy who, like Tom Hoagie, who has like a boring sounding name, or like Zach Blair or something. And if you're Sepp Straka, even though that rolls off the tongue, he needs to add like long hair or like a cool beard or goatee or something. And all of a sudden these 40-50-1s will drop to like 28-1.
Okay.
Just math.
It's just math. It's obvious.
Fade the better looking guy.
Simple
That's what
arithmetic.
It is. Got it.
All right. And then in the category of most random first round matchup you could possibly find, what do you got here?
Yeah, this one goes off tomorrow morning. Like, it's, I think, one of the first groups that are out. Robert McIntyre over Jake Knapp. It's minus 130. McIntyre and Knapp off the tee, a little shaky. But what Knapp is really shaky about is really everything lately. He's been bad with the putter, been bad with the approach play. As erratic as Robert McIntyre might be off the tee, he makes up for it with the approach game, especially lately, and with the short game. I like this minus 130, round one, two ball, McIntyre over Knapp.
Monumental Sport Networks and the DMVs. Sia Najad. Thank you, Sia. Appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas. Appreciate you.
Travelers. Kelly will talk more Travelers a little later on the show.
I got more on Chubby Sepp Straka coming up.
He's got things to say. Paul Carr joins us. Not only Euro Cup 2024, but also the Copa America. That's next.
Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. We shout them all out. We appreciate you taking us in from any one of those spots. We are grateful. Kelly Bidlin alongside. It's Gil Alexander and, still to come this hour, Jason Weingarten with all his bets. Again, I'm anticipating a Rose Zhang bet. This is happening.
Well, we've got probably a pretty safe bet.
Yeah. Kelly's got to his thoughts on the Travelers as well. Our tennis play, off to a good start. Victoria Golubic is a plus 225 dog up a break on our girl, Leila Fernandez. Not our girl today, though. By the way, College World Series, got to point this out as well. FSU, the Seminoles.
Let's go. Come on.
Stave off elimination again for the second straight
time.
Three
more?
They knocked out Virginia. They knocked out North Carolina. Now they're in the double elimination with Tennessee.
Right.
So they got to beat them two times in a row to advance to the actual best of three championship.
That's fine. They beat them once already.
Yeah, that's true. And they didn't call the check swing. I mean, they called the check swing and they shouldn't have. But here's the story today is, first of all, there's three games today in the College World Series. And the Kentucky-Florida elimination game from last night got postponed due to rain. So whoever advances, so whoever loses that game is out, Kentucky-Florida, to start the day. And it's already starting now.
Yeah, it's like right now, right?
When whoever wins that game has to play tonight against Texas A&M in that double elimination.
Really?
Yes.
Because I was even watching the Florida State game yesterday, I was surprised they made that call
they
as
made
early
it so
as they
early
did. Yeah.
In the middle of the Florida State game.
Also, like Florida State game, the longest baseball game I've seen in 5 years.
Forever.
I checked the time at one point. I was like, wait, when did this start?
But it ended well, 9-5. And so Tennessee and Florida State is the second game in between those games today. If Tennessee wins, we're done. But Jamie Arnold is available for either today or tomorrow, and I'm not sure yet which he's pitching in. Maybe someone can help me out, because when I looked before the show, it was still a mystery. Florida State's ace, Jamie Arnold, who was shaky in that first game, but he had some cut from the celebration from the Super Regionals. So he should be back to his full strength. So that's exciting in the College World Series as we try to root our future home. Paul Carr joins us now from Topeka, Kansas. He's the host of the Expected Value podcast, works at True Media Networks, joins us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Paulie, it's your time of year, man. Your time of, I said, not only the year, but the year where all the good tournaments happen, or some of the good tournaments happen.
I know. Euros are running. Copa America starts tomorrow, Friday. I don't even know what day it is. And usually they're staggered a little bit more, but we're going to get, I mean, a whole day of soccer. There's, you know, six games a day once we get going in about a week, and one group stage is ending, the other one's going, and yeah, it's going to be nuts.
And that's why before we ask you about any of that, Kelly had a great point on the break. Talk to us about this turf war between Kansas and Missouri about the Chiefs. What is that all about?
It's just an eternal rivalry in some ways. You know, I mean, there was a similar smaller scale war when Sporting Kansas City was building a stadium about, 15 years ago or so. I mean, it carries over into sports betting, where Kansas passed sports betting a couple years ago and Missouri's legislature is a disaster and can't do it. And there's definitely a Kansas, you know, we're going to pass this because you can't mindset in some ways. And it's sort of the same thing. It's politicians and rich people fighting over money. You know, the Chiefs want more money because being a billionaire can't pay for your own stadium, of course. And the voters in Missouri voted against a pretty terrible bill, or terribly organized bill, at least, earlier this year. And so now Kansas is jumping in, trying to figure out what kind of tax breaks to entice the Chiefs over to Kansas, which would be quite the coup.
Would the average fan care? Because I know, like, you know, with the Skins, if it's D.C. versus Maryland or Virginia, we care. Because, again, the joke for those of us who grew up in spent most of our time in D.C. and Maryland, having a stadium in Virginia, it's like a foreign land. Like, as soon as we go over the Potomac River, we have no idea where we are, right? And especially if they go deep into Virginia. And there's also, you know, if you're out in suburban Maryland versus D.C. proper, where RFK was, is it the same with, I mean, literally you can stretch your hand across, right, and you're in Kansas.
I mean, not really. People wouldn't really care. It would definitely be a point of pride where, you know, Kansans would rib Missouri about it. Like, selfishly, I would care just that if the Chiefs come to Kansas, that saves me like half an hour or so getting to a game in all likelihood. So there's the practical side of it.
Yeah.
But from I'm not going to root for this team because I don't feel like they're in my town anymore, I don't think it's going to matter.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to matter. Okay. Let's talk first, before we get to Copa America, let's talk Euros 2024. And the first thing I want to say to you is Kelly and I, we get out of here at 9 a.m. Pacific, which is exactly when the anthems start. And my old producer number three, Jorge Mondaca, used to do his great handicapping thing. Who is singing the anthem more passionately? And that's who he would end up betting on. But we immediately were talking about stuff after the show, and then Romelu Lukaku has a point-blank range shot. He misses it, and then scores twice, and they both get called back, one by offside, one by handball, right? Unbelievable.
Brutal. The only good thing is nobody scored more than one goal in the first set of group games, so, like, the golden boot bet for Lukaku is not dead.
Not dead.
Yeah, he could add two or three, and Belgium is brutal. Still Belgiuming, just like the World Cup. So very frustrating from a betting standpoint.
You said Belgium is Belgiuming. Is that what you said?
That is correct.
Yes. It's a verb. That's a verb. Okay. Generally, have you learned much from this so far, this tournament?
I don't think so. I mean, Belgium was the big upset, but they still, you know, created plenty of chances, and I still kind of like them to win that group, +250 or so. So I feel like I haven't learned a ton. It was, you know, the good teams were generally good, even if the results didn't go their way. So yeah, you can see the title odds haven't shifted very much early on, as you would expect from one group game. So it's been kind of status quo through the first set of group games for me.
All right, we have three games today, correct? Three?
We do. One just finished. Croatia-Albania just drew 2-2.
Yeah.
I was
like, that is live, right? Like, I was looking at that. That's a bit of a upset for the draw, right? For Albania, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's their first ever Euros point, I think. They may have gotten a point a couple tournaments ago. But big result against a Croatia team that's aging, but still, you know, pretty good and capable of making a run. So, yeah, that was a pretty big moment for Albania there, scoring the late equalizer.
All right. You famously love Germany, but you do not have a pick on Germany-Hungary, correct?
No.
No.
No. The only pick I have that's related to today's games, this is, technically a future. Scotland to finish last in Group A at -115. Still love it. You know, they're probably going to lose to Switzerland today, and then they'd have to beat Hungary in all likelihood to not finish last. So I don't like their chances of that. They got smoked by Germany. Their goal difference is bad if it comes to that, which it probably won't. But yeah, Scotland's the worst team in the group, I think, by a pretty fair margin. So still being able to get -115 on them finishing last is pretty good.
What are we doing with France and the Netherlands tomorrow? That's a good game.
Yeah, this is a little... So the question here is Kylian Mbappe. He broke his nose in the opener, and we think he's going to play with a mask, but we're not totally sure. So I think because of that, you can get +125 on a France win. Which I like. I mean, I think they're a better team even without Mbappe. They're very deep up top. They've got plenty of attacking options. And their defense is really, really good. And Netherlands, you know, they don't have their best playmaker. Frankie de Jong's out for the tournament with an injury. So, this is take the better team at a pretty decent plus money price. France +125 against Netherlands. Yeah.
France, Kelly, going to have to overcome not only the Netherlands, but also Holland and the Dutch at the same time. It's pretty amazing. Yeah.
And the Dutch.
And there's two things I can't stand. It's one of the great lines ever. All right. And just to clarify about Belgium, you still like them to win their group?
I do. You can get at +250. I do. You know, they're still the best team by a fair margin there. Like I said, they created plenty of chances, finished some of them, even though, you know, there was a graze of a handball and barely offside. So they made Belgium. That may be how it goes, but they're still significantly the better team here. If they win their last two games, they're almost certain to win the group.
All right. While most of the world is focused on Euro 2024, there's also Copa America. Let's go through this rapid fire. Format is what?
16 teams, four groups of four, top two advance to the quarterfinals. Pretty straightforward here.
Straightforward. Okay. And Argentina is the big favorite. Why?
Big favorite. Well, two reasons. One, they're the best team. +175 is the price on them, which I don't think is worth it. But two, they have a really nice draw. You could argue the four or five best other teams are all on the other half of the bracket because of the way it'll set up for them. So, you know, they want to play Brazil or Colombia or Uruguay or even the U.S. before the final. So, yeah, best team, best draw. They're the favorite by a wide shot here.
And your prognosis on the good old U.S. of A would be?
So weird. Like, if they don't advance, the tournament's a failure. But they're expected to advance and then lose in the quarters to maybe Brazil or Colombia. Which is that's like precisely meeting expectations.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, kind of like the World Cup. You know, they got out of the group as you hoped and thought they should, then they lost to the Dutch. So it's if they get to the semis for the U.S., huge success.
What was that? Two things I can't say: intolerance of other cultures,
people who are intolerant of other people's cultures,
and the Dutch. That's from Austin Powers, by the way, for those wondering. Okay, you have a bevy. You got a handful of plays here in Copa America. First of all, to win the title, what do you got here?
Yeah, this price, I'm not sure it's still around everywhere, but I have Colombia to win at +1400. They're arguably the third best team at the tournament. If you want to get weird, you could argue they're even better than Brazil. Not sure I'd go that far, but really solid defense, a couple good attackers. Luis Diaz from Liverpool, for example. So +1400, take a shot there. I like that.
All right, and then Canada, you see them advancing.
Yeah, so they're in Argentina's group, so Argentina's going to advance. So it likely comes down to Chile or Canada for that second spot. Both teams have new managers, you know, we're a little uncertain what we're going to get there. I think Chile is the better team, but Chile is minus 140 to advance and Canada's plus 200. So they've got plenty of high-end talent like Alphonso Davies of Bayern Munich. So again, it's plus 200 for a reason, but at that price, I like them to get out of Group A.
All right, that's Group A. Group B, you have a play to advance.
Ecuador plus 160 to win the group outright. This is a fade of Mexico.
Oh, to win it. Yeah, okay, sorry.
Mexico's been kind of a mess for the last couple of years. I think Ecuador is just the better team, and Mexico actually has a shorter price, but I like Ecuador plus 160, really solid in the back half. A little question about where their goals are coming from, but I think they're better than Mexico, so give me that price to win the group.
First, second in Group C.
Uruguay, USA are the two best teams by far. The biggest discrepancy in any group. Uruguay is better than the U.S. U.S. is way better than Panama and Bolivia. Plus 125, to basically the exact to advance.
The exacta of Uruguay and the USA. And then Group D to have 0 points. You have a play.
Costa Rica is just terrible. Their gold generation is gone. They're way worse than any of these other teams. I'd be shocked if they get a point. So plus 275 at 0 points is really good.
Wow. Very anti-Costa Rica. Very interesting.
Sorry.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Enjoy all of it.
I will. Thank you.
He's got a million things to write for Fox Sports in the next few days, so he's got to get to it. We'll come back. NBA MVP next.